Nice to see you all. No one told me there'd be people here today. This is a strange subject. There are aspects of what I'm going to talk about over the weekend that are extremely easy to understand in a practical sense. There are other aspects of what I'm going to talk about that are extremely difficult to understand in a theoretical sense. And I'm going to try to combine those two things in the best way I can, and I'm going to have to rely on you to ask me a lot of questions about it. One of the problems of giving any teaching on the Khandrupawa Nidame Longkhyi is that pragmatically, as I said, it is very simple. And because it's very simple, it's very easy to confuse it with other things that are very simple. And that would be a grave error. So I'm going to spend most of the introduction giving a background to the technical area of it. I'm really only going to get into the Khandrupawa Nidame Longkhyi tomorrow in terms of the actual practice, because it's extremely important that one understands the theoretical basis of it. I'd also say that things mean whatever they mean to us in terms of what we already know and what we have a feeling for. An example of this would be, I was once fortunate enough to pick up an old Hasselblad camera for very little money. I was really extremely delighted by this. Someone once saw it at our home and said, "That's a quaint old camera." They didn't know what it was. I have a student called Trurig, who's a professional photographer, who saw it, and he was delighted to see it, and he said, "Ah, Hasselblad, that's very nice." Now, if you know what this thing is and you see it, it's exciting. If you don't, it's a quaint old camera. And this really applies to everything, that what a thing is depends on how you perceive it. And the Khandrupawa Nidame Longkhyi is very much like this. For anyone who's studied Buddhism for years and has a deep understanding of wisdom and compassion, who's explored those areas and what they mean, then when I talk about this, it will have a certain meaning that's charged with all those years of study and practice. Otherwise, it's likely to sound simply like another idea, and maybe an idea that's been overcomplicated. Because I'm really only going to get into the heart of the Khandrupawa Nidame Longkhyi tomorrow, I thought I'd like to start with an aspect of it that's probably the most bewildering aspect of it. And that is a teaching which is the relationship vignettes. These were a thing that, as part of the commentary on the book, that Khandrudecha and I almost didn't write. We almost didn't write them. It took us about 3 years to decide whether we're going to write them or not, because we didn't want them converted into some form of pop astrology, where you say, this is this kind of relationship, you know. Earth element neurotic man meets fire element neurotic woman, and etc., and where people pigeonhole each other. This would be an awful thing, and we thought about it for a long while about how we would approach this to make that impossible. And we finally settled on writing it as cryptically as we possibly could. We exhausted the shorter Oxford Dictionary. You understand that the shorter is the longest one that you can buy. the full thing is only in some museum somewhere. We exhausted it on elemental words. We had to coin some of our own words. We had to use some archaic usages. And in the end, we had to produce a glossary of little-known words so that people can actually read it who don't possess a shorter Oxford. Our intention in doing this is that it's not possible, or hopefully not possible, to make use of this material in any way in which you could pigeonhole anything, because it's hard to remember what the text is. It's almost impossible to understand as you read it. And what we've found when we've had it read is that people do seem to resonate with it, but only if they've been there in that particular neurotic context. And it's been quite interesting. We've read them all out to our students, and it's interesting to watch people's faces going green as they start feeling physically sick when they remember having been in one of these particular relationship hells. It's really quite interesting. So we thought we'd start with that to give you an idea of where this thing is leading. I mean, I speak of the relationship hells, but there are also the paradisical situations where the confluence of any two elements gives rise to the enhancement of the sparkling through of the enlightened state in two individuals. So we can see in terms of the text how two individuals can facilitate each other's realization or facilitate each other's increasing pain and confusion. So any two elements can do this to each other. That another person can either facilitate our realization or facilitate our increased confusion. The vignettes will be read out so you can get an image of this. The first thing that's read out is the vignette of liberation, which is followed by the vignette of dualized derangement. Each part of the vignette has a fourfold structure. She does this, he does that, she does this, he does that, in terms of either getting better or worse. It's not actually necessary to understand the language. The way in which they're written, if you understand them, you understand them, even if you understand only every third word. If you've been there emotionally, you'll know that without having to look the words up.
Fire and air, the vignette of liberation. She is rhapsodically transported by the elaborate harmonic lattices of his fluent capabilities, and consequently empowered in her own sphere of superb consumption. She vividly venerates the varied vectors he stimulates in achieving victory in widely varying vicissitudes, and through alignment with his virtuosity, magnifies her own gifts in compassionately cavorting with each fabular frisson of phenomenal disportment. He is intricately intrigued by the animated plethora of foci in terms of her enraptured fascination. His diligence is quickened by her passionate enthrallment to the phenomena of her sense fields. His virtuosity and expertise are stirred by the garrulous glamour of her compassion, and he is moved to perform and interpolate more swiftly and with greater engrossment in the finest vacillations of transient detail. In being intricately and actively appreciated through his tirelessly conscientious commitment, she blazes with ardent humanitarian fervency in relation to the spectacular spectrum of phenomenal pulchritude. Through the Gordian sophistication of his exculpative exigencies in respect of her rutilant radiance, she becomes impulsively impassioned in the desireless desire, and her pure connectivity quickens with his. Being loved for his valiant verve and triumphant vigor hastens the proliferation of his diversified engagements with whatever requires his involvement. His attainments disperse into areas of heightening subtlety pertaining to universal concerns whose parameters lie beyond pedestrian pragmatics. His creativity is self-created and can apply itself equally to the profound and insignificant. Fire and air, the vignette of dualistic derangement. She feels forlorn and isolated with reference to the unabating activity which seems to spring from his rapidly convoluting approaches to their situation. She seeks to seize whatever appears on the horizon and draw it within her private domain of prurience before he is able to categorize it according to his own schedule of preferable administration. She consumes indiscriminate elements of his procedures in order to lure him with the sense that she shares his nervous energy and frenetic urges to relate apparently unrelated streams of interpretation before agreeing to accompany her in her wishes. According to his intricate reconnaissance, her desires are deemed desultory and deficient in research. He experiences her as imprudent and reckless in her lusts, and therefore cautions her ad nauseum with reference to the diverse and disparate dangers of launching full tilt toward the foci of her adoration. He grows ever more suspicious of her lack of caution concerning her wants and infers from her foolhardy directness that she has complex intentions which are likely to endanger his schematically indexed strategies for avoiding calamity. Subject to intricate questioning and inapprehensible suspicion with respect to the foci or experience which are fulfilling to her, she becomes searingly swift to grasp at anything he is not quick enough to subject to his inscrutable reasoning. In being atmospherically interrogated with regard to any desirable focus she delineates, she ceases to delineate anything in advance of consummation and appears impulsive, impetuous, and capricious by compound factors. In relation to her apparent impetuosity, he becomes quadratically apprehensive and distrustful. He becomes suspiciously perplexed as to why she acts without regard for their survival. He conspires through stealth and concealment to circumvent her impending forays into intensifyingly private acts of consummation. His self-defeating cycles of paranoia merely cause her to grasp more dangerously and deftly, and he becomes tortuously tormented by the need for control.
Any questions?